Hey, Christmas Murder fans, this is Katie Accardo. Listen in while I tell you the story of the Evergreen Murders, a Mackenzie Monroe Christmas mystery. Part 1, Christmas Comes to Evergreen. Mackenzie Monroe had always hated the holidays. She found them bordering on alarmingly annoying, obnoxious, and frivolous. About the time October 1st rolled around, or earlier, as was seeming to become the custom in recent years, Mackenzie tried her hardest to block out the jangling refrains of jingle bells, the screaming children in line at the mall waiting to see Santa, and the mind-numbingly monotonous and predictable Christmas movies that seemed to dominate every television channel for a quarter of the year. Fortunately, in sunny Los Angeles, Mackenzie's city of residence for the past 17 years, giving Christmas the cold shoulder was fairly easy. She avoided crowded shopping centers like the plague. She kept her Spotify channel tuned to her favorite podcasts, so there was absolutely no chance of a Christmas carol making its way into her newest model wireless earbuds, and she threw herself into her work with a vengeance. Not like throwing herself into her work with a vengeance was anything different for her from January until September. Mackenzie was a workaholic and liked it that way. About a year ago, her boyfriend of 6 whole months had broken up with her, claiming that she didn't have the right frame of mind when it came to their relationship, that she needed to figure out what it was she wanted, and that she better think long and hard about how much time she spent on work instead of focusing on those who focused on her. As he carried on and on, Mackenzie rolled her eyes in disbelief at how desperately cliched the whole breakup was becoming. Also, because the timing of said breakup was only a month before Christmas, the ex had referred to her as a Grinch. Mackenzie had never heard of such a word before, so she had Googled it. She only had to glimpse a greenish-looking monster and some ridiculous quote about a heart being 3 sizes too small and immediately snapped her computer shut. She realized she didn't need him or his lame holiday references. It wasn't that she had trouble dating or finding men to be interested in her initially. At 5'8", Mackenzie was tall and striking and quite pretty, with wavy blonde hair and green eyes. It was more that she had always found dating boring and had never really established the time for it. She had her work, and that was usually all she required. Mackenzie was a senior agent at the Sandra Hirsch Hollywood Talent Agency. At 35 years old, she was the youngest in her position, and pretty sure this intimidated the hell out of most everyone there. Everyone, that is, except her lovely actor clients. Most of them were way too wrapped up in themselves to realize how far she'd come and what she could do for them to even care. But not Cameron Stack, her newest and most promising young client. Cameron was 25 years old, more handsome and charming than the devil himself, and could actually act, which, in the world of up-and-coming, young, handsome, and charming actors, was an anomaly. Cameron was a child actor who got his start on the soaps, worked his way up to the primetime shows, had appeared in 2 Broadway plays, and now was knocking on the door of real stardom after having been cast in a leading role in the next Michael Bay action film. Even though Cameron was gayer than a $3 bill, he enjoyed playing the straight roles and had not yet come out in Hollywood. Mackenzie had gladly taken him on as a client 6 months ago, and since then, they had become somewhat friendly. As much a friend as Mackenzie could call anyone, what with her tiny, grinchy heart. And now she was sitting across from him, yelling at him as he sat smirking on the blue leather couch in her office. Cameron had recently been offered the role of the small-town architect boyfriend in one of the million holiday movies currently shooting in order to air next Christmas on the Candy Cane channel, and Mackenzie had had a good chuckle over that offer while having her 3rd glass of wine one night. She almost tossed the contract into her gas fireplace, but instead drunkenly texted a picture of it to Cameron to relay the news, mostly because, as an agent, she was required to tell her clients about every single offer. Included in the text, besides the phrase, "Can you believe this shit?" which was mostly made up of typos, was a Santa emoji, the bloody knife emoji, and a volcano emoji. She had woken up the next morning to a series of texts from Cameron asking what the project was, could he get some more information on it, and why the volcano. Mackenzie, vaguely hungover and late for work, hurriedly dashed off a text in reply stating that while she was sure he was kidding, he was expressly and indubitably forbidden from taking the role or any other in which his character would be seen on a channel named after a seasonal peppermint treat. That had been 4 days ago. And now, here was Cameron, sitting across from her with a smug smile on his face, explaining that because she, his agent, had not been willing to relay the candy cane offer to him and had clearly been intoxicated at the time of its inception, had taken matters into his own hands, called the Candy Cane Production Company and the director of the movie himself, and had gladly accepted their offer. The Candy Cane Network and the director were beyond thrilled. Mackenzie was livid. What in the hell were you thinking? This is the worst career move of all time, she spat at him as she got up to pace the room. Why on earth would you ever want to do this movie? Cameron crossed one long leg over the other and shrugged, flipping his hair nonchalantly. Because I think it would be fun. And I love Christmas. You think it would be fun and you love Christmas, Mackenzie shot back incredulously. Are you even listening to yourself? What are you, 8 years old? No, but isn't that the point of these movies? Just to feel like a kid again and have a little fun? The point of these movies, Mackenzie replied, is nothing. Less than nothing. They are a waste of time, production, and money. Yeah, but they make lots of it. But you won't, Mackenzie shouted. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw an intern glance toward her office in terror before scurrying away. Mackenzie stalked over to the blinds and quickly closed them. She turned to Cameron and, regaining her composure, lowered her voice without losing the urgency in it. Cameron. I saw the contract. They were offering you peanuts for that role. You are now worth so much more than that. Your career has taken off. Never mind that you didn't even ask me, as your agent, to negotiate the terms of this godforsaken Christmas movie for you, she practically spat. But I truly hope that you did not accept that menial and pathetic monetary amount that those racketeers were offering you. Don't worry, I didn't. Oh, thank God. I'm actually doing it for less. What? Yup. Cameron drummed his fingers on the edge of the couch, then slapped it with the palm of his hand. I'm only making them pay me half of what they originally offered. Mackenzie balked. She felt like she was going to be sick. She sat down behind her desk and managed to croak out, "You can't be serious." I'm dead serious. But don't worry, I'll still pay you your cut of the original amount. Cameron smiled and leaned forward, placing his elbows on his knees. You want to know something? Not really. I'll tell you anyway, Cameron started. Growing up, my mom loved Christmas. I mean, loved. Still does. She kind of passed it off to my sister and me. It's our favorite time of year. Every holiday, we would bake cookies and decorate the Christmas tree and watch It's a Wonderful Life on TV. Ever since I moved out to LA, I've been so busy with work that I haven't had much time to focus on the things that really matter, like the holidays. Anyway, so you know what happened? I took the part in this dumb Christmas movie, and I called my mom to tell her, and she was so happy she started to cry. Cry, Mackenzie. I was cast as the lead in a play on Broadway, and my mother barely batted an eye. I tell her I'm playing a supporting role in a candy cane Christmas movie, and she loses her shit. That is why I'm doing this. Cameron finished his soliloquy and sat back against the chair, obviously pleased with himself. Mackenzie stared back at him, blinking slowly. She couldn't believe it. Cameron was dead serious about this movie role, and there was nothing she could do about it. She was about to open her mouth to speak when the door to her office flew wide open to reveal her boss, Sandra Hirsch, looming in the entryway. Sandra was petite, with a shock of white hair and a smear of red lipstick. She was also about 8,000 years old and British. Or so most people thought. A rumor had been flying around the office for forever that she faked the accent and was actually from Pittsburgh. Mackenzie didn't care if Sandra was from Timbuktu. She only cared about earning and keeping her respect and receiving her paycheck. Today, Sandra was wearing her signature lip color, huge pearl drop earrings, and an enormous fur coat. Never mind the fact that the temperature outside was a seasonably warm 79 degrees. She toyed with her vape pen as a vanilla-scented mist swirled around her. Cameron swiveled in his seat to take in the interloper. "Well, if it isn't Cruella de Vil herself," he muttered. "What a compliment," she crooned back, giving him a wink and locking eyes with Mackenzie. "What's this I hear about Cameron starring in a movie for the Candy Cane Network?" She twirled her pen and gave Mackenzie a glare. "He did it, not me." Mackenzie put her hands up in the air as if she were being held at gunpoint. "I told him not to take the role, that it was a career-ending stupid move, but he didn't listen to me and went behind my back and called the producers and told them he'd take it. I am more than happy to call them back right now to see if we can get him out of this contract." Sandra continued to glare at her. "Well, why on earth would you want to do that?" she asked. "Because, well, I'm just trying to fix this, and I know Randy over at the Candy Cane..." "You will do no such thing, Mackenzie. I, for one, think it's a splendid idea that Cameron star in this movie, and frankly, I am quite disappointed in you that you did not think to secure this role for him in the first place. You've really let me down this time." "But I... wait, what?" Cameron turned and grinned at her with an I-told-you-so face. "Do you know, Mackenzie, how many 18-year-olds, 20-somethings, 40-somethings, 70-somethings, and so on, watch the Candy Cane Network during the holidays? Countless numbers. They will love to see Cameron as one of the dashing leads, a boyfriend lawyer, what was it, love? Oh, it's a small-town architect ex-boyfriend who becomes a current boyfriend again to a hard-working city girl," Cameron answered. "Yes, yes, that. Very good. They film in 3 days in Ohio, and I think you, Mackenzie, should accompany Cameron for the week shoot." "Wait, what? Why?" Mackenzie asked in disbelief. "You are his agent, dear. His not very good agent who failed him miserably, but his agent nonetheless, and he needs your support. Plus, I want you down there to make sure the contracts get signed, and so on and so forth. We'll do you a bit of good, I believe. Get some fresh air." Mackenzie couldn't believe her ears. Cameron had now turned back to her and was making a movement that mimicked a throat slashing. Mackenzie shook her head at him and pleaded with Sandra.
"I..." "What? You have plans, dear?"
"Well, no, I don't, but..."
"Good, didn't think so. You will fly to Ohio day after tomorrow and return on Christmas Eve day. That is all. Oh, and Merry Christmas, you two."
"Merry Christmas," Cameron hollered back as Sandra slammed the door behind her in another sickeningly sweet smoke cloud. Mackenzie sank into her seat and put her head in her hands. "I can't believe this," she mumbled. Cameron, on the other hand, was excited, clapping his hands and dancing in his seat.
"A Christmas adventure, just you and me. What will we see? What will we do? Who will we see? And who will we do? In Ohio."
"Wait, what's Ohio?"
"It's a state,"
Mackenzie replied, her words muffled because her hands were still over her face. A very boring, very cornfieldy state in the middle of nowhere. Okay, geography nerd alert. How do you know this? Cameron looked incredulous. I was born in Indiana. You're kidding me. Unfortunately, I am not. Why do you think I love it here so much? Cameron jumped up from his seat and headed toward the door, sashaying and looking over his shoulder. Well, Miss 4-H Princess, we are going on an adventure. Get ready to have the best Christmas ever with yours truly. Mackenzie dropped her head into her hands on the desk.
Can't wait. It'll be great,
she said sarcastically. Oh, come on. Don't be such a Scrooge. What's a Scrooge? Mackenzie asked. Jesus Christ, you are hopeless. And with that, Cameron also slammed the door and was gone. Mackenzie had forgotten how small the airports were in the Midwest, and she had to admit it was kind of nice to step off the plane and not be jostled to death by city people in a hurry to get to their final destinations. The Dayton Airport was pretty much every passenger's final destination because there were only 17 gates and no connecting flights. She and Cameron found their luggage on the carousel in under 5 minutes and began looking around for their ride to the town where the movie would be filmed. They didn't have to look very long because before they knew it, a young girl with curly brown hair and heavy black framed glasses came bounding up to them. She was wearing an Ohio State sweatshirt and jeans and was clutching a handmade sign that proclaimed their names in bold green marker. Before Mackenzie could open her mouth to speak, the girl's hands flew up to her mouth to stifle a scream.
Oh my God! Oh my God! She screeched. It's really you! It's really Cameron Stack!
The girl adjusted her glasses and swooned at Cameron.
My name is Jessie Thompson, and I'm one of the producers. Okay, well, not a real producer, more like a junior producer. Okay, well, actually more like an intern, I guess, on A Christmas Eve Miracle, and I just want to say how excited I am, well, we all are, in fact, to have you here in Evergreen.
I thought we were in Dayton, Mackenzie said.
Well, yes, we are. I mean, currently we are, but we're going to Evergreen.
Evergreen, Ohio, that's the town where we'll be shooting the movie. Population 1,251.
Oh my, aren't we excited, Cameron replied, pulling down his Dolce & Gabbana sunglasses.
So nice to meet a fan. An Ohio fan at that. All right, Jessie, lead the way.
Okay, follow me, Jessie said, exiting the airport. The production company sprang for a town car to pick us up. Isn't that great? She exclaimed.
Fabulous, Mackenzie said, lugging her heavy suitcases behind her. About how long is the drive to Evergreen, that is?
Oh, it's only about an hour, Jessie said, sliding into the black vehicle that pulled up in front of them. But we have so much to do. I was hoping to go over the itinerary and shooting schedule with you guys on the way. Then there's...
I'm going to sleep, Mackenzie interjected. The Ambien that I took on the plane ride over here still hasn't worn off. Cameron gave her an exasperated look.
Don't mind Mackenzie, he said to Jessie. She's just a grouch. I would be happy to go over the schedule with you.
Mackenzie glared back at him. She settled into the back seat and fell asleep to the sounds of Cameron and Jessie chattering before they even pulled away from the curb. She awoke with a start as the car was exiting off the highway some 70 miles later. In another mile, the car took a left onto a two-lane road, every inch of which was lined with massive evergreen trees. Outside the car window on her right was a green sign that proclaimed Evergreen, Ohio, population 1,251, where every stranger who arrives is a friend upon leaving. Mackenzie would have loved to have made a sarcastic comment to Cameron right about then, but he was still deep in conversation with his new best friend, the co-ed. Mackenzie continued looking out the window until they came upon the town. As if on cue, the minute they started down the main drag, fat snowflakes started to fall. Mackenzie groaned, picturing herself tramping through a snowbank in her 4-inch Jimmy Choo stilettos. Cameron, on the other hand, was elated.
"Oh my God, snow!"
he trilled, clutching the frame of the car window like a 5-year-old.
"Look, Mackenzie!"
"I see that," she deadpanned.
"What an adorable little town! It's like a winter wonderland," he continued.
Mackenzie was about to object with another snarky comment, but thought better of it as she surveyed the town. It was cute. Very small, but it had a certain charm. It looked like something out of an old movie. It had one cineplex that, according to the marquee, was showing It's a Wonderful Life, one general store, one diner aptly named the Evergreen Diner, a post office, a pharmacy, and a library. At the end of the street were a small inn named the Bow's Bed and Breakfast and an extremely diving-looking bar called the Reindeer Pub.
"I thought you guys might like to get dropped off at the inn to get settled, since that's where you'll be staying for the week. I hope the accommodations will be okay," Jessie said.
She shrugged and laughed nervously.
"I mean, it's not much, but it's all we have here."
"That will be just fine, thank you," Cameron said as he pulled the luggage out of the car.
"Okay, great," Jessie said. "Well then, I guess I'll see you guys bright and early at the first shoot tomorrow morning. You have all the information. Bye."
And with that, the car pulled away. Once they had unpacked, Cameron and Mackenzie decided to meet out in front of the inn to make the 2-block walk to the diner for dinner. It was nearing 8 p.m. and Mackenzie was starving. Cameron showed up in a peacoat, sweatshirt, jeans, and a pair of UGG snow boots. Mackenzie was still wearing her Valentino blouse, pencil skirt, and the Jimmy Choo's.
Okay, Cameron started. "This outfit? Like, in a props? This is basically all I have," Mackenzie countered. "You didn't bring a coat? Or boots? What were you thinking?"
"I don't own any of that stuff," Mackenzie complained. "I live in LA, where it's always sunny, not miserable and cold and snowing like this place. And besides, this was a work trip. I wanted to look presentable." Cameron snorted as they walked up to the door of the diner.
"Well, girl, we're gonna have to get you some warm clothing. I'll ask Jessie tomorrow if we can arrange for some clothes for you."
"Yes, I sure would love to wear a flannel shirt for 2 weeks straight," she trailed off as she entered the diner, which stopped her cold in her tracks. The restaurant looked as if Christmas had thrown up in every square inch of the establishment. Mackenzie's eyes hurt just looking at it. Bright red, green, and gold tinsel was strung up on the walls in scalloped patterns. Dangling from the tinsel strands were giant paper cutouts of Frosty, Santa Claus, and Rudolph. Gaudy plastic snowflakes hung from the ceiling, and Cameron bumped his head on one as he ducked to enter through the door. A giant blow-up Santa Claus was placed in the far corner of the restaurant. Kitty corner to the Santa was a small artificial Christmas tree with strings of huge colored bulbs wound around it that were flashing on and off. Underneath the tree was a bright red tree skirt and a pile of faked wrapped presents. There were 8 booths lined up against the far wall, and each one was covered in a red plastic tablecloth featuring different Christmas patterns. On the diner counter sat a trio of stuffed elves that bobbed up and down and sang "Please Christmas, Don't Be Late" when a button was pushed on their plush stomachs. From the tinny speakers, Mackenzie could hear the original rendition of "Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer." It was, without a doubt, the most impressive and nauseating sight, holiday or otherwise, Mackenzie had ever laid eyes on.
"What in the..." Cameron started to say, but was interrupted by a portly woman in her 60s coming around the corner from the kitchen.
She dried her hands on a towel hanging from around her waist and adjusted her trifocals on her nose. If Mackenzie had not known better, she would have thought the woman was Mrs. Claus. She had a kind face and close-cropped white hair. She was wearing jeans and orthotic shoes and the most eye-catching vest Mackenzie had ever seen. The green fleece material was cut in the shape of a Christmas tree. Little colored lights blinked out from it, and the rest of the vest was covered with buttons that displayed phrases like, "Kiss me, I love Christmas," and "All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth," and "I believe." "I'm very sorry, but we're closing up for the night, so if y'all could just skedaddle and come back in the morning, be much appreciated," the woman said, not looking up in front of her. When she finally did look up to see Mackenzie and Cameron standing in front of her, she let out a shrill howl. She clasped her hands together and brought them up to her chest. Mackenzie could swear she saw tears in the woman's eyes. She wasn't used to this sort of response to her actors. Back in L.A., Cameron was barely recognizable, although Mackenzie was trying to change that. There, he was just another dime a dozen, up-and-coming wannabe actor. No one worth a second look. But here in Central Ohio, he was a legitimate god.
"Oh my heavens!" the woman exclaimed. "Oh my word! It's Cameron Stack right here at the Evergreen Diners. I live and breathe!"
She clutched her hands to her chest yet again. Mackenzie worried she might have a heart attack.
"Please, please, come with me. We'll get you seated and get you anything you want. Anything at all. Raoul!" she hollered back into the kitchen. "You gotta stay for 10 more minutes. We have special guests."
She turned back to Mackenzie and Cameron as she slid 2 menus onto one of the plastic top tables.
"I am Diane Tannenbaum, and I will be your waitress for the evening. I knew you all were coming to shoot the movie here, which we are so excited about, but seeing you in person is just so exciting. And Mr. Stack, may I say, you may be the most handsome man I have ever laid eyes on. Except my husband, of course. May God rest his soul. Sam, now he was a looker."
Cameron grinned. "Well, thank you, Diane. And please, call me Cameron." Mackenzie looked around the restaurant. Half the lights were off and a mop was standing up in the corner. Cameron spoke up and said, "Did I overhear you say you were about to close? We don't want to keep you if you are. We can always find another place to eat." Mackenzie looked at her watch. It was 10 till 8.
"You close before 8 p.m.?" Mackenzie asked. "And yes, we can totally go find another place. Any sushi or Asian fusion restaurants nearby?"
Diane laughed. "Oh, honey, this is the only restaurant for about 25 miles. And you won't find anything open in the general vicinity past 8 p.m. I know you city folks probably have your late cosmopolitan dinners, but here in Evergreen, we like to eat early and retire early so we can get up at the crack of dawn and do it all over again. It is no problem for you two to eat. You are our VIP guests. Raoul can make you whatever you would like. Breakfast is served all day, by the way." Cameron ordered a Western omelet and coffee, and Mackenzie ordered a side salad with vinaigrette and a red wine. Diane looked up from her order pad.
"Oh, I'm terribly sorry, but no liquor license in this establishment. For drinks, you'll have to go down to the Reindeer Pub, but I can't guarantee they have any wine. At least not any fancy kind, but food I can do. So, let's see, the salad with dressing on the side comes with 2 eggs any style, hash browns, and a side of pancakes or toast."
"Oh, no, that's all right. I'll just have the salad." Cameron glared at her.
"She's very sorry if she's being rude at all," he said. "She'll take pancakes, and if she won't eat them, I will."
Diane scurried off to take their order to the kitchen. Cameron whispered,
"Can you just stop being an uppity bitch for like once in your life?"
Mackenzie glared back at him.
May I remind you that this whole thing, she waved her hand around the restaurant, was your idea, and now we're stuck here in this shitty little town for a week in order for you to dramatically end your career. Oh, please, Cameron spat back. It's not so bad here. The people are nice. You're just being a diva. You just love them because they worship you, she countered. Okay, I admit, that doesn't hurt, Cameron replied with an impish grin. Just then, the bell over the front door clanged, and a man in his mid-40s strode into the diner. He was about 6 feet tall, with wavy dark hair and chocolate brown eyes. He was wearing jeans, tan work boots, a plaid flannel shirt, and a lightweight black coat. There was a 3-day stubble on his chin and a glint in his eye. He was carrying a manila folder in one hand, and once he caught sight of Cameron and Mackenzie, headed toward them. Oh my God, it's the real-life brawny man, Cameron whispered to Mackenzie. Who knew Ohio had the hottest lumberjacks around? Mackenzie had to admit that the man was quite good-looking in a rugged sort of way. She adjusted her skirt and ran her hands through her hair as he approached. Once he reached the table, he stuck out his hand. Nick Tannenbaum, Esquire Extraordinaire. Cameron lunged forward to grip his hand. I'm Cameron Stack, and this is Mackenzie Monroe, high-powered Hollywood agent, I presume, the man said, holding her gaze just a little longer than necessary. Yeah, how did you know who I was? Well, you see, in a town this small, everyone knows everyone and their business within about 5 minutes of their arrival. Also, my mom and your fabulous waitress, Diane, texted me that you two were here and I live just around the corner. And I'm the local attorney in charge of your legal paperwork and riders, etc., for the next week that you'll be here shooting, so I thought I'd bring the first set of contracts over and introduce myself. You're the local lawyer? Cameron asked, sliding over in the booth so Nick could sit down next to him. Man, remind me to break a few laws while I'm here so you can help me with my legal defense counselor. Nick laughed. Mackenzie rolled her eyes. Evergreen's one and only attorney, Nicholas Kringle Tannenbaum V. That's your real name? Mackenzie blurted out. But it's so Christmassy? Nick interjected. Yeah, that it is. My family came over from Germany and founded this town in 1805 and were Christmas tree farmers. That's how they got their last name. Over the year, the town's name came to be called Evergreen because of the bounty of evergreen trees we have here. The Christmas theme just kind of stuck, and clearly my mother drank the Kool-Aid and named me after Santa Claus, essentially. Diane came out then, carrying 4 huge plates along with a fresh pot of coffee. I see you've met my favorite son, she exclaimed. Your only son, Mom, Nick said, rolling his eyes. Still my favorite. Can I get you something to eat, honey? You're looking a little thin these days, Diane trilled, pinching one of Nick's cheeks. I think he looks just fine, Cameron said, checking him out over the rim of his coffee cup. No, I'm good, Mom, thanks. I just wanted to come by to drop these papers off with them. He turned to Mackenzie. The contracts are pretty much exactly what the Candy Cane Network and I discussed, but if you want, I can leave them with you. You can look them over tonight, make sure everything seems on the up and up, and then sign them. You can just get them back to me tomorrow night at the mayor's dinner. You two are still going, right? Mackenzie sighed. One of the activities on their itinerary was to have dinner at the mayor of Evergreen's house, a man by the name of Denver Sebastian. She was not looking forward to it, but supposed she would have to schmooze with some of the more important townspeople at some point, so she might as well get it over with. We'll be there, she said. You're going too? Oh, sure, Nick said. It will be a small gathering, but Denver and I go way back. We were actually on Evergreen High's football team together back in the day when
He was a senior and I was a freshman, if you can believe it. But he was much better than I ever was. Anyway, he continued, dropping the manila folder on the table and standing up to leave, I better let you guys eat your dinner before it gets cold. Can I offer you a ride to the mayor's house tomorrow night? It's no trouble. I can pick you up at the inn at 7. Before Mackenzie could respond, Cameron spoke up. We would love a ride, wouldn't we, Mackenzie? Yeah, sure. Thanks, she offered. We'll see you at 7. Pleasure to meet you, Cameron. Mackenzie. His hand rested on Mackenzie's shoulder for a minute, and Mackenzie felt a slight tingle of pleasure. I will see you guys tomorrow night. He headed for the door with a quick glance back. Pleasure was all mine, Cameron murmured, hungrily digging into his omelet. The Evergreen Murders is written, produced, and performed by me, Katie Accardo. Sound mixing provided by Jack Heyer. Music provided by Jack Heyer, Jim Van Reith, Steve Bain, and the Angel Choir. Tune in next Tuesday for part 2. See you then!